they do sometimes speak to me on certain occasions this to any preconceived ideas. I'm not exactly suggesting that you do, but I suppose it's only human and natural that you should help certain persons, sometimes persons that you have in mind don't talk to you. But I would say it's always best to come with a completely open mind without any sort of preconceived idea as to who in particular might come and talk to you. I know that for the kind of work that you're doing, the sort of people that you're endeavoring to reach, that you particularly do desire certain people from this side to come and talk, so that their message should bear some weight. Therefore, it's probably quite human and natural that you should ask for certain people perhaps to come. But I would warn you, it's not a wise procedure. It's always best to come completely open-minded without any strong desire for certain person or persons, because those things do set up a strange atmosphere. I hope you won't mind my saying this, but it's really for your protection and your guidance. Especially why you must be careful of impersonation. And I'm not suggesting such things happen here, but these things have happened and no doubt will continue to happen. And sometimes when the conditions perhaps are not particularly good for some reason or the other, elementals or cells who are not far removed from Earth, who are not necessarily evil, but who are perhaps mischievous, can come through and impersonate, and they know by your thoughts sometimes certain things that you may desire or certain people that you may wish to come, and there's always that possibility. But unless there is a strong protection built around you and the instrument for elementals sometimes to push their way in. But this does not happen here, but it can happen if the conditions are not very strong, for some reason or other, the power is medium weak. And since there's so much nearer there, these souls, it's much easier for them to contact. And one must be on one's guard against it. So it's best to have a completely open mind, without any, as I say, preconceived ideas as to who should come. Thank you very much. So with your friends, unfortunately, in a sense, that's a blame. They say to you, have you ever been a mistress of so-and-so? If you think so-and-so would come and speak, and probably people might say, well, if so-and-so would come, no doubt you could get messages from Shakespeare or Bacon or and so on, you see. Well, it's all very well. Well, you see, it's not possible to call up the day. It's not possible to say, oh, well, next Tuesday I'm going so-and-so, and I go to ask the medium or the medium's guides to bring through Shakespeare or whoever it may be. That is quite impossible. Any medium or anyone that tells you that you can, just the desire to communicate with any particular person at any given time is not speaking the truth. Because communication does not happen, does not work in that manner at all. In fact, the person may go for sounds with the hope and intention, desire of speaking, shall we say, to the husband or the son, as the case may be. And there may be a very, very close link indeed. In such a case there would be. But the whole point is that if that person is not present, or it does not perhaps wish to communicate, or for some reason cannot communicate, there's nothing that one can do about it. You cannot force these issues. These things cannot be commanded or demanded. man kan binde Kooperik zwischen der man Divinity, zwischen den Harmonie, and in love, and with an open mind and an open heart. These people who try to make a different contact with a certain person, it's all right to approach. But there's no guarantee that they will achieve results. In fact, I would go as far as to say that the attitude and the sense is the wrong one. It's human and natural in the case of a relational dear, dear to one to do that. But to sit, as some people do, with a particular object of making a certain contact with a certain person, and rather approaching it, shall we say, as some do on a very personal and often materialistic level, is all wrong. One must sit always with the idea of true spiritual communion, looking upon it as an opportunity to gain knowledge and experience which you can use to better your world and to help those who are in need. So many people approach the subject from the wrong aspect. They go into it often with a very self-centered, selfish motive. And it's not at all surprising that sometimes they come up against trouble and difficulty, and they often leave the subject disillusioned and disappointed. And they often blame the mediums and the controls, whereas actually, if they were to be sincere and honest with themselves, they are very to blame. After all, communication, as I see it, is something far different from the average spiritualist. Realizes it to be or thinks it to be. Communication should mean completely lifting yourself, as it were, onto a higher mental and spiritual level, away from earthly thoughts and conditions, to look upon it as an hour of sweet communion, and during that hour, praying to hope that you may be given the inspiration and the guidance spiritually, not only to better yourself and to help yourself onto that higher level which we all aspire, but to help those less fortunate, to be of real service, to dedicate oneself in service, to forget self in service, not to approach this, as so often many, many people do, with this selfish motive, and the very motive from which so many approach this subject is so wrong. It's not a bit surprising that they get misled, they get misguided, that instruments who perhaps would have shown great promise and could have been great instruments truly in the real sense are often brought down to a lower level, and in consequence the controls and the guides that would work through them and have endeavored to often, although they do not give up completely, you would say, they are often very much rejected and put to one side, and lower entities take over, and they banter, they bore themselves if they are these souls who come and hope for these sort of messages. You, fortunately, I know, do endeavor on the highest possible level, and if at times you have this natural desire to contact certain people, it's always for the good of others and the hope that you propagate truth and illuminate minds. But it is always best to leave it completely and absolutely to our side as to who should come and as to what they should say, because it is important that those souls who are chosen, and often a person each time you come here is chosen to speak to you on a certain particular level, on points raised during the conversation which will benefit others in your world. We have a plan, and I want you to fully realize that we have got a definite plan, and in a sense it's like a campaign that we have planned for you and for the work that you endeavor to do. Always we are bearing your working mind. I always want you to realize that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Is that something often?
No.
Oh.
My name will probably surprise you, because you probably will not even consider that I would possibly even be interested in this subject. My name is Holman Hunt.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much on earth. I have very little personal knowledge of spiritualism, as you call it.
Mm-hmm.
I have some friends in the artistic field who had these senses, and I was not myself terribly drawn to it. I think I automatically, quite naturally, realized that there was something to it, but I thought it was best to leave it alone. Since I've been here particularly, I have become tremendously interested in communication, and I have made a study of it. I've been, for many years now, endeavoring to discover all that I possibly can about communication and the methods of communication. And I find it an intriguing and interesting subject, and I've waited deliberately, as a matter of fact, myself, for some long time before I came, because I wanted to be sure that when I came I would be able to speak properly, well, intelligently, and to some extent I hope to be able to overcome barriers which I've seen other people come back with from this side when they've endeavored to communicate. You should probably know I was an artist, and some people say I was inspired. Well, that was true to a point. I realized as I looked back on my work that there were moments that I was inspired. Because some people never care for my type of work. And today I think it's rather old-fashioned and rather sort of thrown out. But that doesn't really worry me at all, because when I look at a lot of the art, the so-called art of today, well, I have no doubt that they can possibly accept my work.
What
do you call it out, Mr. Huck? Well, I don't call it out at all. I think it is a form of inspiration, if you can call it that, from certain elementals on this side, and I think a lot of them are extremely fine mediums of a kind, and they definitely are controlled, but I wouldn't like to suggest to them controlled by them.
Mm-hmm.
Their work certainly shows that, I'm afraid their work certainly shows that they're not inspired in the highest sense.
Do you still paint on that side of
them? Yes, I still paint. And I'm very happy to be able to say do. As a matter of fact, I should imagine you have well been told often that we have great places mm-hmm. of learning here, great halls of instruction and learning. We have many forms and types of buildings. Architects still design great buildings. Artists such as myself do murals. And I have been working on a mural for a considerable number of what you would call years, although we don't have time in the same sense. And I have still yet much to complete. But since I've been here, I've met many, many great souls, many great artists. And you are one of my greatest friends, and I certainly admire his work more than most. I always did. I think that his artistry, his ability, and of course I know now that not only, of course, had he such a natural aptitude for it, but he was heavenly inspired, inspired by great souls. He was given a gift which was used to the utmost. I cannot speak too highly of his work. And also many others I met. And we worked together. We worked, for instance, on the same canvas, which a lot of people, perhaps being artists on your side, would not altogether like. The idea of the point is that sometimes five or six great artists, as the world understands it, can work together amicably and in complete harmony, almost like one.
That would be a good thing.
Do you know the scenery and all that things you do on Earth, or beautiful scenery like that? Or in your world?
Do we have such beautiful scenery, did you say?
There's all scenery like the mountains where you are. And
oh, yes. You see, I think it must be extremely difficult for anyone in your world to picturize our world for various very good reasons. Because whatever you try to visualize, no matter how highly inspired you may be, or no matter how you may desire to reach up to a high spiritual level in your conception of things, to a great extent you must be tremendously held down to by the very conditions of your world, that you cannot visualize the spiritual world without to some extent colorizing it with a material conception. But what I think one should say is that the other worlds are in a sense a reflection of yours, although perhaps some people might interpret it better, saying that your world is a reflection of ours. I'm talking here not about human beings so much as about nature itself, about landscapes and so on. We have, it's true, every aspect of nature and surrounding as you have. But then again, we have many other aspects which we cannot explain to you, because quite frankly, there are no ways in which you can do it. You cannot depict something from which there is no language. The same as you may be conscious through science of certain things which at one time were considered impossible, if they were ever considered at all. For instance, you have knowledge of the possibility of various things. You are feeling your way in a scientific field into the already conditions around your world. You are plunging, as it were, into the atmosphere. Gradually science is discovering there are certain elements, there are certain things there which they don't know very much about yet, but which they no doubt will discover a lot later on, but at one time would have been considered impossible. I mean, men just didn't even realize for centuries upon centuries that there were sound waves in the atmosphere. And the same applies, of course, to our world. I should say possibly our worlds, because there are numerous spiritual worlds of different levels. And those nearer to your plane are more similar in consequence to your condition of life. And they are the planes which the average person goes upon so-called death. But far removed from these spheres, your spheres, if you like to call them such, there are grand, magnificent places in which not only do you find replica of earthly natural surroundings,
by the mere thought, desire,
in a split second of your time, be present.
Mm.
A new world, to some extent, becomes a consciousness to me, as Jerry Wyden put it.
Mm.
You see, it's all a matter of consciousness. We are in our own environment, living in a world to which we are fully conscious, and which therefore to us, because we are conscious with it, is solid with us, and has reality. If I want to come to Jung, I just automatically desire and think, and I can be with you. And I enter to some extent, but not fully, mind you, but to some extent into the consciousness of your condition of life, which means that I am conscious of being present in a room such as this. I am conscious of the people in that room, but what is more important, I am conscious of their thoughts, of what is emanating from them. And if those conditions, those thoughts, those conditions that they give, as it were, or create, are conducive to me, and this applies to all souls here, then I can make a contact, or I can make a communication. And of course, this is one of the reasons why I think that so many services, if not failures, are not on a very good high level, because, as I said in the beginning, so many people, their whole attitude of mind is so materialistic, it's so personal to themselves, so selfish, that if I wanted to, and of course naturally one does want to help everyone, but I could not contact the person on the level which I would want, and therefore I would consider it best not to make a contact at all, whereas some other entity from another sphere, nearer, more in tune, more to some extent, you will say, the like mind will make a contact. And I'm not suggesting that those souls are not necessarily honest. I've already spoken about souls who can impersonate and can mislead, that is true. But the average person coming from certain spheres of the earth is quite honest. And they will give you a picture and a realization of their life, and they will help you if they possibly can, but in a way they can always on a material level. A lot of these psychics do, I suppose, some people say, good work, but it's always on a very mundane, very materialistic level. And really, it's of no spiritual value, no spiritual help at all. And I would go as far as to say that the average spiritualist contacting these particular souls through particular types of mediums would be much better off without them. That is my clearly not an opinion, because I do not think that this great truth can ever hope to advance until the people themselves who call themselves spiritualists are prepared to begin to think more clearly on the lines of spiritual progression rather than material progression, the material personal aggrandizement which so many of these people do have in their makeup. So many use this truth, use this subject on a level which in itself is not beneficial, but I would go as far as to say is often in fact degrading. Degrading to themselves and degrading to those souls that endeavor to make contact with them or would make contact with them from those spheres where best help would be given. The whole tragedy of spiritualism is that it is on a very low level, and that is due to many of the people who call themselves spiritualists, and this suitable word I cannot imagine them spiritualists. Which it does suggest people are spiritual, but the majority of spiritualists, apart from being spiritual, are much more materialist. That is the tragedy of spiritualism, why it's never become widely recognized. I know it's accepted more today, and it's considered quite respectable to be considered spiritualist, and it used to be done that, but that's an awful effect, that they hadn't really got spiritual. spiritual values and heart. So I hear from that sincere people who have and who endeavor. And I can only say that where they are concerned, they do receive great help from spirit. And they are the ones who look to raise this great, wonderful thing to the highest possible level, that people will be spiritually advised, spiritually guided, help. But we have a long way to go, I'm afraid. People like Lodge, Doyle, Flammarion, and many other friends that I met here who had this movement at heart so long ago, who had such great hopes for it, are very disillusioned people, because they had not felt that spiritualism has made the advance that it should have done. And it's obvious they do, because people have been too content to keep their spiritualism on a low level. As long as they got culture of a kind, and as long as they please this and that person by the mundane messages that they gave through to them, that seems to be the sufficient as far as the average spiritual is concerned, which of course it was never intended. It's true that there are varying kinds of instruments that are used for varying kinds of work. But today, you have very few good instruments of a high caliber. You have practically no physical mediums involved. The ones that would demonstrate to scientific minds, particularly, the truth of this subject. People today do not seem to have the patience to develop their spiritual faculties and gifts. There are so many distractions in your world. People are much more inclined to expect everything to be done for them. You see, the whole approach is wrong. People are much more materialistic than ever they were. Whatever one may say about the Victorian age, and certainly was many hypocrisy in it, but at least whether it was always genuine or sincere or real, perhaps isn't quite the point, but there was this attitude of giving to God some of the time of the individual. I don't say it was always sincere, but it was always genuine. You might say that it was just routine. All of this is perfectly true. But there was this feeling, there was a spiritual part of man that should be encouraged and developed. There was more respect for human life, too. And it seems to me that man is racing towards his doom. You would have thought by now that with the experiences of two major wars that man would have learned his lesson. But no, he goes on plodding in the same materialistic way without any spiritual guidance to speak of. The church doesn't seem to give any sort of definite directive. One moment he talks about the Prince of Peace, and then in a time of emergency starts lifting the flags and the soldiers and the cannons. You see, Christ cannot be divided to suit individuals or groups of people. Christ is today the same as yesterday, the Prince of Peace, the man of love and compassion. And you must always see him like that. And it's tied to emulating to follow him. That's why he said that we should emulate him and follow him. Through the attitude of we must learn and develop accordingly. But I'm afraid so few people have really any true grasp of what it is to be a Christian. In fact, there are many varying degrees of Christians and aspects of what a Christian should be. But really, in your world, it's difficult to know what a Christian is, what he's supposed to be. We know what he's supposed to represent. And very few represent Christ, I can assure you. But that's another story.
And Mr. Hart, don't you think when they talk about the Christ spirit, it's the power that everybody has in them that they can use?
Yes, that's true. Everyone has within himself the power of the Christ, has within himself the inspiration. He likes to draw upon it and utilize it. You see, after all said and done, you're not just only physical frames, physical bodies, you are also spiritual bodies. But you see, the spiritual aspect of man is so meshed and immersed and so sort of pushed down that he doesn't seem to give himself. The spiritual part of man, the spiritual nature of man, isn't given the opportunity to exert and to express itself. Man is taught from birth to live a materialistic existence. It's taught him, it's pushed into him, it's fed into him from childhood as he grows up into youth, from school to business and so on. Man is taught to be a materialist. Whatever people may say about teaching them spiritual values, which to some extent Nephilim may, it's true. But man doesn't know anything about his spiritual force, his spiritual power, and what he could achieve by developing his spiritual faculties and gifts. As a child is sent to school to learn the various necessities, such as reading and writing or what have you, so he should be taught equally to use his spiritual gifts, to develop them, so that he can be truly a spiritual person in balance and in harmony with the material aspect of his nature. You see, you're taught to go in one way. You're taught to develop one aspect of your nature, not the other. If one were taught from childhood these truths, these spiritual truths, these spiritual values, how to use one's spiritual faculties, and then, as you expand and grow, you work in harmony, the dual personality, if you like to call it that of man, would become so in harmony that there would not be and could not be these terrible disasters of entering your world. There could be a great understanding between peoples and nations. Man would have a directive. As it is, man has no real directive at all. He just flounders. From one generation to another, he flounders, he doesn't think, he's always floundering, but there's always that possibility that if he keeps on and on indefinitely, that he will one day sink, and it could be the end of the human race. It's a possibility. One does not dwell on this, one does not like to think about it, but in science, properly understood and properly applied, whatever scientists discover, it's obviously there to be discovered, and it should be utilized for the good and the welfare of the human race, for which it is intended, but unfortunately it's invariably used by governments for their own ends, materialistic ends, and people in consequence live in fear, and generations of new children are born in fear, and this fear breeds more fear, and eventually breeds war. And that is the one thing that we dread. We are so concerned about your work, you know, because although you are told that you are really amassing power for prevention of war, it is obvious that sometimes someone is going to strike the match who said, the whole world plays. You cannot keep on amassing, you cannot keep on getting more and more without something happening. You can only hope and pray it can be avoided. And that is one of our main reasons for coming to you, to avoid this disaster, to change men's minds into the ways of peace and of love and harmony. You may say to me, oh yes, well it takes two to make the war, and it takes two to make harmony and peace. In other words, it takes this nation and that nation. I agree, all that is true. But someone, sometime or other, has got to show greed, got to start the ball rolling. And unless someone does that, then of course something eventually will happen. You cannot keep on building up and up and up without something happening. And sooner or later, something must be done about it.
Don't you think it's a desire for power and wealth that is governs the world to such an extent now?
Yes, I think to a point that's true. I think that was far more true some 50 years ago. I mean, England, for instance, when she was a great power in the world, I think she could quite genuinely be accused of that. After all, English, world great nation, peoples who went out to conquer and to take unto themselves other lands, and many black spots and marks in the history of Ulster. And I think possibly many years ago this was much more apparent than it is today. I think this giving up, gradually giving up of colonies and so on, giving people that freedom to choose for themselves, is a step in the right direction. I don't think today that there is that desire for aggrandizement, for power upon the part of England. And I don't honestly think that any particular nation is seeking power today. I think the hunger for evil is, and everyone's afraid of everyone today. I think that no one wants war. The point is that everyone is so feared that their neighbor may be stronger and deal with a death blow, that they're all preparing and making sure that they're that much stronger, which is rather futile. Sometimes soon, somehow, some great nation has got to come out into the open and say, well, this is absolutely ridiculous. We just cannot go on like this any longer. We are wasting our energy and our time, above all our monies, which could be used for the good of humanity, the good of our people. We're not getting anywhere at all. It's stalemate. Let's be sensible and rid ourselves of all this fear and utilize all our energy and time and effort and money into helping our people, helping the world. Let us become a united world. That will come. I feel it must come. I dare not think what could happen otherwise.
The difficult part is that the Bradley country, if they knew there was an afterlife, so many don't believe in an afterlife. And they don't know
if they don't. Everyone realizes the truth of spiritual things, that they realize the truth of the life after death and the communication, what all this implies, what it can mean. I think there could be a complete change in the whole of the human race. But we've also not remembered and realized there are so many barriers that have to be broken down. There are so many different religious parties and organizations at war, if not in a physical sense, mentally at war, one with another. There are all kinds of creeds and dogmas, there are all the varying races, all the differences of opinion and outlook and religious fervor and lack of it against me being. We are up against so many, many isms, and it is all these isms that bring tragedy into your world. Whether they are religious or political, they are the curse of the world, all these isms, all dead and all will be. Instead of trying to realize, truthfully realize, that they are all part of God's kingdom, all part of His will, that they have within themselves the power to release themselves, to overthrow these forces which hold them in bondage, and realize that God isn't contained in one church or another, but God is all around and about you, within you, that you are spiritual beings here and now. You do not need isms. In fact, I would go as far as to say, until man releases himself from all these isms, there can be very little hope of spiritual progression. And that is what we're trying to do. I don't like the word spiritualism. I don't particularly like spiritualists as such. When I say I don't like, I don't want you to misunderstand the expression. I like everybody. I love all human beings. But they are, to me, invariably being misled because of their own personal self-opinionated aspects towards things which are fundamentally of God. They are so afraid
way to set aside all these chains that bind them and be free. Until the man is free of his abuse and free of all these materialistic conceptions of God and his world, until they free themselves of all the myth and the legend and the hypocrisy, they cannot hope to be free to see truth. Truth can only be revealed when man is free. And that's why I feel we have such a tremendous task. In other words, what we've got to do, we've got to undo a deuce of a lot that has been done over centuries of time, which is tying men's minds up like little compact parcels. And for so long that their minds have been tied up like these parcels that they don't even know what's inside it. And until we can unravel all these knots and get all these loose ends straightened out and get a clear line, we cannot hope for true progression. And I think spiritualism has that, generally speaking, is just as much to blame as any otherism, because the spiritualists themselves have not approached this. Well, if they have begun to approach it in some cases, very few have approached it on a true spiritual level. They have brought this truth down to their level, and that's why it hasn't made the progress it should have done. That's why Dora and Love and the rest are terribly disheartened and disappointed, because spiritualism, get any spiritualist church, doesn't know where you go, any organization, any society, and what do you get? On a very low level, Georgia, which is on a banal, terribly low materialistic level, pandering to the ordinary minds of ordinary little people who just do not aspire, too lazy, long as they get what they want materially. We are very disheartened, disillusioned. That's why when we have people like you who do try to bring this onto a level which can be understood and appreciated truly in a spiritual sense, that we can do some good, we can make some effect, we keep on trying. We're grateful to people like you. Anyway, I must go, the power is waning, and I shall hope to come again sometime, and of course many others too. Well, good bye, and God bless you.
Thank you,
Mr.
Holmes. Thank you. Goodbye.
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 Thank you, Missy.